Welcome to the Off the Bench podcast. Today we're digesting all the action from the game week just gone, looking at Darwin Núñez going big, just how good are Arsenal and Newcastle, checking out Mr. Consistent Harry Kane, and of course, touching on those Haaland and Salah blanks for all of us that gave them the armband. I'm today's co-host, Gianni Battici, and I'm joined by Andy FPL Sonaldo. Andy, how are you, mate? Did you have a good game week?
I'm well. I didn't have a great game week. It was a rough one leading into the World Cup. Unfortunate, but still, FPL first half of the season was super fun, and I'm excited to be back potting with you, Johnny.
I don't feel like many of us in the FPL community had green arrows. I had a big red arrow myself. It felt like one of those where the popular players, the template players, those that are occupying most of our spots in our teams probably didn't perform. It did feel like one of those, didn't it?
I think there was just a couple of the template players that ended up returning. And if you didn't have any of them, then it was a massive red arrow. For me personally, I had a 200% red arrow. So it really sucks. But at the same time, it's a long season. It's a marathon. And we keep chipping away.
Yeah. And it's so tight in those ranks. I was around 200K overall rank before the weekend. And now I'm at 400K. So yeah, really poor week. But I look at it and go, oh, okay, I only need 5-10 points. And I'm back where I was. It's so tight in those areas, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I just want to add to that, Johnny, is, for example, if your rank is really high, let's say you're 1 million, 2 million, something like that, the difference between 100K and a 1 million rank is, let's say, about 50 points. If you disperse 50 points over the next, let's say, 20 game weeks left, then that's only about, you know, 2.5 to 4 or 5 points a game week that you need to make up. So, you know, you really don't need to try to go crazy and try to haul the first couple of weeks we come back. It's just, you know, stay patient and consistent, and I guess that your time will come.
Yeah, I guess it's like an extra assist per week. It's nothing from one of your players.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Where should we start, Andy? I think we should start with Darwin Núñez, looking at some of the lowly owned assets. I think he was around 9% owned before the weekend. He went big, and we've been talking about him for a while in terms of his underlying numbers. Well, we saw that come to fruition at the weekend, where he, of course, got the break at Anfield.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned underlying numbers. You know, there's one main one that we all focus on, it's XG. And Darwin Núñez is right below Haaland in terms of XG. So he's right up there. He looks so threatening. I mean, I know just watching him play, you just want him in your team because he's not sort of a pass first type of striker. He's give me the ball. He doesn't put his head up. He wants to score the goal. And he's super close to the goal. So it's unfortunate I went against him in game week 15. I had an opportunity to get him, but he did play Tottenham in game week 15, and I thought that was a tough fixture. But for those that went Darwin Núñez in game week 16, what a magnificent player to have in your team.
Yeah, he's going to be someone that's highly owned come game week 17, I'm sure. It's definitely someone I'm looking at, especially if he has a good World Cup. I like the way Liverpool is setting up with him. I think it's good for Salah owners as well. Like we're kind of seeing a front two, aren't we? And Darwin gets the opportunity in that front two to drift left because Salah automatically likes to drift right. We know that from his time on the right wing. And Bobby Firmino's got this kind of new role in the number 10 just behind as Klopp looks to change that formation. So it's almost like a diamond in midfield with Bobby Firmino at the top and then Darwin left and Salah right. And whilst that definitely benefits Darwin, having a strike partner, allowing him to go left as he did for so long at Benfica, we even saw him play on the left wing a bit. I'm not sure how this is good or bad for Salah. Yes, we want to see Salah central. Yes, we like seeing Salah as the most advanced player. But we're also so used to Salah being the main man up front where every chance falls his way. Yet this season, we have seen a slight shift. They are sharing the chances between them. If anything, Darwin edges it. What does that make you think about Salah moving forward? Because he's so much more than Darwin. I think a lot of us will want to cover that Liverpool attack with one of them. But do we go Darwin and save that extra 3-4 million? Or do you go with Salah knowing he's probably that more reliable captaincy option, for example?
I think that's a fantastic question and also a big dilemma we'll all have throughout this World Cup. And by game week 17 comes, I'm pretty convinced a majority of us will have Darwin in our teams. Liverpool in game week 17 onwards has pretty decent fixtures coming back. The issue, as you mentioned, is what to do with Salah, because Salah always has that potential to to really go off. But we've been waiting for that this entire first half of the season. It hasn't come. $13 million is a lot of money to invest. And, you know, you could really spread that budget out. I don't know about the double up, to be honest with you. I also think that we're sleeping on players like Robbo, who's going to come in and be at $6.8 million now, an incredible price point to have in your team. So the question is whether you have both Salah and Darwin, or you have one of Darwin or Salah.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. What about Liverpool defence, Andy? Do you think, you mentioned Robbo there, they've been so disappointing for clean sheets. Only 4 clean sheets so far this season. That's the same as Nottingham Forest and the same as Bournemouth. We can't be spending 7 million plus on a Trent anymore, can we?
Yeah, I think Trent is out of the picture this season. He's had only one assist so far. Again, he might come back into the fold, who knows? But at his price point, it's very expensive to have Trent in your team. And when you can get Robbo for $6.8 million, a lot cheaper than Trent, I think that's the way to go moving forward.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I don't know if I'll be able to stretch to any Liverpool defenders come game week 17. Okay, should we look at some of the other big successes of the weekend just gone? Darwin, of course, was one. But another one for me, and I've had this guy in my team, I think all season, is Harry Kane. He has been so consistent. He doesn't really get those 15-pointers anymore. He hasn't this season. But he's only had 3 blanks. When I say blanks, like 3 weeks all season so far, where he's not registered a goal or an assist. Like, that's super consistent. And whilst he's not someone I've been given the armband to, thank you, Haaland, for being in the game, Harry Kane's ticked along really, really nicely. And from that Spurs attack, he definitely feels like the one.
Yeah, it's very interesting, Gianni. Last season, I remember we were lacking strikers, and this season we have an abundance of strikers. You know, the question then becomes, do you want Kane or do you want KDB? Do you want Kane or do you want Salah? And at this moment in time, I'd rather have Kane. You know, he's closer to the goal. He's the talisman. He's been ticking along really nicely this season. As you mentioned, only 3 blanks. So I think Kane is also going to be a very popular pick come game week 17.
Yeah, I'm surprised his ownership's still fairly modest, like 26% owned. Sure, he's in 1 in every 4 teams. But when you look at the numbers he's been producing, I kind of thought he'd be way, way higher than that. I certainly feel like he's a little bit of a differential for me. I mean, I've had 3 premiums. I call it a freemium team. So I've had Haaland and Salah and Kane. I don't know if I'm going to revert back to the shape of 2 premiums come game week 17. But even if I have 2, I think you're right. It'll be Haaland with Kane, and then maybe a Darwin who's kind of in between, not quite in that premium bracket in terms of price. Have you looked at the 3 premiums versus the 2 premiums, and where are you thinking you'll end up?
Yeah, I haven't tinkered too much, but I do think that I'm interested in going heavy in the striker slots. For example, you could go Haaland, Kane, as well as Darwin. I think it's a little too much there, but 2-mium at least, but 3-mium also sounds very enticing.
Yeah. Yeah, so successes in the game week. Another one we have to mention, and they're not the most fashionable team we talk about for FPL, but they probably deserve a little bit more love. And that's Bournemouth. Like, again, it was 3 goals at the weekend. And I was just looking at the numbers this morning, Andy. They've scored more goals this season than teams like Chelsea in the Premier League. Right? Yet we've never considered, really, other than Solanke for a week or two got a bit of love, we've not really been owning Bournemouth players. And they're so affordable. Kiefer Moore going big again. Solanke's been a good own. There's a few options in that squad for very modest fees. Knowing they rank 12th for goals scored, they're not too bad at all. I mean, the break probably comes at a bad time for them, because with the momentum of a 3-0 win over Everton, they probably would have just wanted to carry on playing. They're looking good.
No, I totally agree. I was not that hopeful on Bournemouth this season coming into the Premier League, but they're ticking along nicely. They had a tough run in the initial period, but Solanke has been delivering. I think he's an underrated FPL asset. He's proved to be, you know, a very decent asset at 5.7 or 5.8 million. So Solanke is the only option for me from Bournemouth. I still do not trust the other players, to be honest. But moving forward, if you need an enabler, this is the guy to have.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. He might be someone I look at. I guess you mentioned about those striker spots. It's difficult to know where we're going to end up, but someone like Solanke gives you that really nice route for a third striker spot of someone that plays most minutes, that registers a fair few assists and looks like a goal threat as well. But I guess if we're looking at the likes of Haaland and we want to get Darwin in our teams, and many will want Harry Kane, do we just go big up top? But then we also can't forget, there's still a lot of good mid-price forwards in the game, like Mitrovic and of course Callum Wilson. They're going to be still on our radar. come December the 26th for game week 17. So it's a tough one. Loads that sold Mitrovic this week went down or across to someone like a Wilson or a Jesus. Those that could afford to sell him to a Darwin obviously had a big result. But most those that sold Mitrovic went to a player again that blanked. It was a little bit tricky for that mid-price forward slot in game week 15. But usually I think we'll have a fair few options in that category.
Yeah, agree. I just want to add one more thing to the Solanke discussion we're having and the Mitrovic discussion we're having is that players like Solanke and Mitrovic are underrated FPL assets because we forget these teams don't play European games. And yeah. You can see in the last few game weeks, Johnny, all the Leicester, for example, are performing because they have a week off between games. And I think it's something we should watch out for in the second half of the season. Fatigue is going to set in. There's going to be a lot of rotation for the top team. So I'm interested in, you know, making sure I pick out the right players that play in domestic league only.
Yeah, such a good point, how it catches up with you as the season ticks on. Like the first few months, maybe the players are fine with that schedule, that busy schedule, and they've certainly got bigger squads before all the injuries kicking. But then as soon as fatigue kicks in as well, you've got to think, especially for those that take part in the World Cup in January and Feb, for those playing twice a week every week, it's going to take its toll. And I guess I look at teams like Arsenal and think, and you know, Newcastle slightly different, who aren't in Europe, but they've not had huge injuries this season and they're winning what feels like every week. Do you think teams like Arsenal, we might see a little dip from because of that fixture congestion in the second half of the season, knowing they've got perhaps a thinner squad than the other teams going for the league title, like of course Man City?
I think the argument you made about them having a thinner squad is the only reason I could see them sort of take a downturn. But we've been saying this about Arsenal for the past few game weeks, and they've performed, and they're just an elite team this season, as well as Newcastle. And I really think they're going to try to challenge and go all out for the Premier League. They have a fighting spirit that hasn't been seen for a while. They have this team chemistry. And, you know, when you're the underdog in a title race, there's something about the team spirit to be said. So I'm excited to see how the season plays out between Arsenal and Man City.
Yeah, me too. I guess we should focus a little bit now on both Arsenal and Newcastle, because for me, they've been the two form sides so far this season and the ones where I think we should probably have triple Newcastle and triple Arsenal in our teams come game week 17, because again, their assets are fairly well priced. You know, not too many premiums in those two teams, and they've been the two standout options. They've also got the best two defensive records, the only two teams in the league that have kept 7 clean sheets. And I think I'll be going into game week 17 again with probably double Arsenal defence, maybe one or two Newcastle defenders or Trippier and Pope. Who are the Arsenal players first you're looking at? And then perhaps we'll do the same with Newcastle. But I know Martinelli has got huge ownership and no one's really looking to sell. Do you go Martinelli with a defender or two, or do you go Martinelli with a forward and a defender, do you think?
I mean, I think you answered your question, right? Because you just said they have an amazing defense. And if you can get an asset from their defense for a cheap price point, it's a no-brainer. And that cheap price point has to be Ben White, who's also going to the World Cup. I hope he does well. But at 4.4 or 4.5, his price point is amazing to have in your team. You could easily rotate him as your fourth option in your FPL team, or you can even start him week in and week out. So I really like Ben White as an asset. I think Martinelli is a great asset. His value is so good that he enables you to have other premium options in your team. The last one is between Saka and Jesus. I'm really torn on this. I would like to know what you think, Johnny.
Yeah, I'm torn as well. And I might just go Martinelli and then go double Arsenal defense, because I feel like the value might be there. I mean, Jesus misses a huge amount of chances, but he does get the chances. And Arsenal fans will tell you, and rightly so, he's a brilliant addition to the team. And I don't think anyone doubts that. His work away from scoring goals is so, so valuable. And every manager that works with Jesus probably said the same. Guardiola was a big fan and I think reluctantly had to sell him. You know, he gets in the Brazil squad. Is he an elite finisher? No. Will he ever be? Perhaps not. So for FPL, he's not the best option because he misses those big chances and he doesn't register as many goals as he should. So fans will love him, but perhaps FPL fans won't. Saka has the penalty appeal, seems to always be involved, a set piece threat as well. But then you look at it and go, I can get Martinelli for so much less. And is there much between the output of those two players? So I think I prefer Saka to Jesus. But if I can only go one, then it's Martinelli with a Ben White, who, by the way, has had a big price jump. I'm just looking at, he was 4.5 million in game week 13, Well, he's already jumped to 4.7. So he's had a couple of price rises in recent weeks. So I might go White and Martinelli almost certainly. And then that third option, it could be Ramsdale if I go without Pope, or possibly it's just another Arsenal defender. I mean, Zinchenko hasn't had a huge amount of returns this season, but hasn't always been fit. I think if he has a long period in the team and he doesn't have a World Cup, so he can perhaps spend some time in the gym and really look after himself in the next month to make sure he's ready for the return, I think Zinchenko could become a really good option. I like the way Zinchenko plays in the team. A bit like Cancelo at City, kind of moves from fullback into the midfield and often becomes a bit of a creator in the team, which I really like.
I think the role you're talking about is sort of that inside wingback role that he does play, like Cancelo. Yeah, so I really like the idea of doubling up on Arsenal defense. I think it makes sense. If I can add an additional perspective to how to treat Arsenal assets, it's that they're extremely undervalued, because if you think of it, they're the best team in the league at the moment in time. And you have Saka and Jesus, who are expected goal involvement monsters. And they're also at 8.0 price point, which is, when you compare that to a Man City asset up top, it's very cheap, right? When you compare Jesus to someone like Kane, it's way cheaper, but the chances of Jesus returning is just as high, if not higher, than someone like Kane. So I think we should really think of Arsenal assets as undervalued assets, and definitely a triple up is on the cards.
Yeah, for sure. I was impressed with them again at the weekend. Like, as soon as Wolves have that new manager bounce, you think going to Molineux isn't an easy game. And again, like, it's a clean sheet. They looked comfortable at times, but their game management is so, so good. And they look like a team that really do look like they're going to challenge for the title this year. I guess a team that perhaps won't challenge for the title, but looks good value at the moment for a top four finish is Newcastle. Again, if I look back at what we've seen in the first few months of the Premier League season and look at how I can improve my own game and where I've been good and where I've been bad, one area I know I've been poor is I haven't reacted quickly enough to that Newcastle attack. And I actually haven't owned a Newcastle attacker, an Almiron or a Wilson all season. Sure, I've had Trippier like everyone else, but I was slow to react there. And perhaps I thought it was a little bit like Lingard when he was at West Ham a couple of seasons ago, where he just scores a couple of really good goals out of nowhere. And you think, okay, it was a one-off. He's overperforming his XG. He's not as good as we think. And I'm talking about Almiron here, but actually he's showing consistently, as Lingard did at West Ham, I should add, that he's a really good FPL option that we probably need to cover in our teams, because he doesn't look like slowing down.
No, I remember seeing a tweet about Almiron from you and how you noticed him rising. And I mean, with you exactly, I was too late to hop on their assets, especially Almiron and Wilson. I really wish I had one of them. And Almiron makes the most sense. I mean, for his price point and what he's returning and the way he looks just on the eye test as well, he's the perfect FPL asset. And I think he continues to perform, because it's not just about individual FPL assets. It's about how good these teams are. And Newcastle is an elite team. You know, they're a top four team in the league. They're going to be challenging for Champions League come next season, the you know, following season. I really think Newcastle assets are assets to watch out for come game week 17.
I've just checked out the points so far to date this season, Andy. You're not going to believe this. Okay, so the best goalkeeper in the game so far, Pope, 70 points. Probably not a surprise. The best defender in the game by a country mile is Trippier on 96. Saliba's on 74, second place. The best midfielder in the game, ahead of De Bruyne and Salah, is Almiron on 93 points. He's 5.8 million. So again, like, that top of their band in position, Almiron, Trippier, Pope. Surely that's the Newcastle triple up. Callum Wilson, does he form part of our thinking, or is it just so simple we go Almiron, Trippier, Pope?
No, I actually think Pope is not going to be as popular in game week 17. I do agree. We all had Pope and Trippier, so it really didn't matter if they returned points, because we all had him. I think Almiron is going to be in most of our teams. Wilson is a question mark. The fact that he's going to the World Cup just speaks volumes and speaks to how well he's done this season. So kudos to him. But he's very injury prone. We have enough attacking options in our FPL teams that I think we can go against Wilson. So maybe Trippier and Almiron's a no-brainer, but I'm very curious to see where we go with the third Newcastle spot.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Pope either. And, you know, the Newcastle defence has been so good in recent weeks that they've actually conceded very few shots against them as well. Earlier on in the season, Pope was making loads of save points, which was good because Newcastle were conceding those low XG shots from distance. Comfortable saves for Pope means he often would feature in the bonus points. If you look at the last few weeks, he's made 2 saves, 4 saves, 0 saves, 3 saves, 0 saves in the last 5. So again, like, that Newcastle defence is so good and the team is so good. They're always on the ball. They're not conceding possession. Therefore, Pope's not worked that hard. And maybe we want a slightly busier keeper in goal for those points. But yeah, we should probably just touch on Almiron before we round up on Newcastle, because he has been that good and scoring so many goals. I guess for him, this break isn't good timing. The momentum Almiron has, probably wants to keep playing every weekend. And he's about to have a few weeks off. Of course, he doesn't go to the World Cup. Paraguay haven't qualified for the World Cup. But Almiron was delivering pre-season. I think it was back in the summer, we were looking at it going, he scored more goals pre-season than any other Newcastle player. The signs were there, but again, we were just slow to react. But I'm sure he'll be in lots of our teams. And when I look in that price band, he's the standout midfielder for less than 6 million.
No, 100% agree.
Other budget midfielders, I've got Andreas and Bailey in my team, Sinaldo. I mean, Andreas looks like he's a hold, but Bailey's one of those players. Every week when he's on my bench, he seems to score points and score goals. When I need him to play, he's often benched or gets those one-pointers, as he did at the weekend. I think he got a zero-pointer for me, which wasn't great. He looks like someone you probably need to sell. Have you looked at Aston Villa assets under the new manager, or do you think they're just very much a wait and see?
I think it's a wait and see. I think Bailey is going to come into the picture once again for many of us FPL managers because his price point's so great. And, you know, Emery is an elite coach and he's going to come into Aston Villa looking to change the culture. And I think he's going to do a really good job. The thing about Bailey is that since Stevie G has left, he's played on the left, he's played on the right, but he's continued to start. So it just shows that he's an important player and someone that Emery is going to want to develop even further.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that Aston Villa front three. And I think he's still probably working out who his favourites are. We saw Danny Ings score big at the weekend. Is it Ings and Watkins, or will it just be one of them? Where does Buendia and Coutinho come into that? Obviously, Leon Bailey as well, who was one of my disappointments of the weekend, but might have a brighter future in the second half of the season. Other disappointments of the weekend, we haven't spoken about captaincy yet. It felt like the world and their dog captained either Haaland or Salah. So for those that didn't, they probably went someone like a Darwin Nunes or a Kane and had a big green arrow. But it was disappointing for captaincy in the weekend just gone. But we can't complain, can we? Because we've been going Haaland or Salah all season. They've pretty much been producing.
Yeah, it was the first game of the week as well, and Haaland blank definitely hurt for us captainers. I especially brought him in for a hit, which was even more awful, but it happens. I mean, he's delivered every single game this season. Every time we've captained him, he's hauled multiple times, so it made sense to captain him this weekend, but it just didn't happen to work out.
I feel your pain. I also brought him in for a hit. It shows how crucial he is to this game that we both had the opportunity to bring him in during the unlimited transfers for free, and we both felt like we had to take a 4-point hit to bring him in and captain him because he's been that good. I think we both made the right call, but we were both clearly super worried. We were worried about going without him. And yeah, of course, this had to be the weekend he blanked. But City at home, we think they're going to score 4 or 5 goals every game because they've been doing that. But I guess this weekend showed that they are normal and they can be vulnerable at times. I mean, City are always going to be a team that have that high ceiling and a team we go big on. And of course, Haaland's going to still be the obvious captain candidate for the second half of the season. But does seeing that game at the weekend against Brentford make you think, okay, perhaps we don't need triple City in our team every weekend? Yeah, maybe it's just Cancelo and Haaland, for example.
I mean, I try not to react too much to one game week. I still think that this is what makes football and FPL so beautiful, is that we're trying to predict a very unpredictable game. And, you know, the prediction here is that City's going to do well every single game week, regardless of who the opponent is. And sometimes they're not going to play well. And it just happened to be this game week 16. So I still think that a triple up on City is the way forward. I still think that I want to get as many assets as I want. You know, we saw with Foden, sometimes he's a troll, right? Because we bring him into our teams, he's not performing, and then he scores a goal out of nowhere and he can haul anytime in any game week. So I still think that we shouldn't react too much to just one game week.
Yeah. Yeah, those City mid-price mids can be so frustrating. I feel like I've learned my lesson a little bit in the last few weeks with Foden. I didn't have him for his goal against Brentford, but I had him for the 3 weeks before that. I sold a reliable option, as many did, like Trossard, because the fixtures weren't there. Bought Foden in, and he had three benchings on the trot. And I think it was 3 one-pointers on the trot, because he is someone that will have those 10, 15-minute cameos. So he'll use up a valuable spot in your 11 for his 15-minute cameo. And if he's not registering points in that, it's a one-pointer. Do we look at those Man City mid-priced assets? You could include a Mahrez or a Grealish in that category with Foden and say it's just best to swerve because it's too risky. And we thought Foden was becoming a bit immune to Pep roulette because he was starting every game, but he's shown in the last month he's absolutely not immune to Pep roulette at all.
It's a very tricky puzzle, and I totally agree with you there, because let's say Cancelo and Haaland are locks in most of our teams. Who is that third City asset? You could go a defender, but once you go defender, that locks you out of going potentially to KDB or Foden or whoever it may be. Maybe Alvarez comes into the fold again. And so the issue there with going defense is that you can't get a third attacking or second attacking spot. However, if you decide to go someone like Foden, you have to worry about benching. You have to worry about who's going to play. Pep roulette is certainly a factor when it comes to FPL.
Yeah. It's so frustrating because I always look at City and just say, I need to have 3 bites of the cherry with this team because they are a team that can go and score 5 goals in any game, perhaps unlike any other. And I always feel like I need to cover that Man City midfield, but I've been stung by it quite a bit this season. And look, if you can stretch to De Bruyne, there's your reliable asset. There's your player that delivers most weeks. It's just the money. If you go De Bruyne and Haaland, you're chucking all your eggs in one basket, and it perhaps means you can't own a Salah or a Kane. In terms of Spurs, Andy, I know we mentioned Kane earlier, but the rest of the team, the result against Leeds, 4-3, that was just a game we knew we were going to get goals in. The Spurs defence hasn't been great, has it?
Not at all. I'm not confident in their defense right now. Maybe they turn it around, but we need more evidence. We need to see if they actually can get a clean sheet. They just don't look like an elite team this season, unfortunately.
I've been so disappointed by Perisic. Like, I know he's had a few assists. I think he's had 4 assists, but he's not had a goal yet. And he came with such a reputation as a defender that will be playing potentially out of position, but even as a wing back, we know how attacking they are under Conte. He's had 45 points this season, not too many clean sheets. As I said, no goals. We kind of thought we were going to get a lot more from him.
I have a question for you. Do you think Perisic has sort of gotten older and obviously slowed down? His pace doesn't seem like it used to be at Inter Milan.
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know if it's just the adjustment to the league. And we've seen so many players come from Italy, or, you know, Perisic has had quite a bit of time at Bayern in the Bundesliga as well, where the pace is slightly slower. The Premier League is so frantic. It can be so end-to-end. And I just wonder if, yeah, age could be catching up with him, or it could just be an adjustment. You know, Perisic is a fitness monster, and perhaps he's lost a yard of pace in terms of acceleration. But in terms of stamina, I think he's still got it. I perhaps think Conte would have wanted to rotate him a little bit more. And we know historically Conte does that with his wingbacks. You kind of don't expect Conte wingbacks to play 3 times a week. Perisic has often had to play 3 times in 6-7 days. And that's partly because Sessegnon's lack of form, but also Sessegnon's injuries. And I think that's not been ideal for Perisic. He probably needs a little bit of rest time. You would look at it ordinarily and go, oh, if he didn't have a World Cup, he'd have a nice little mini pre-season again. But unfortunately for Tottenham fans, there's a good chance Croatia have a good World Cup and Perisic is a starter for them. He kind of looks like he needs a little bit of a rest.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree with you. I think Perisic is, again, one to watch and someone that I'm not super confident in coming for the rest of the season.
Yeah, those Spurs wingbacks are just crucial to the way Conte teams will play. And I know Spurs fans have been a little bit frustrated at times with Conte, but the system isn't going to change. And I feel like he needs slightly better resources. Your right wing back, your left wing back in the Conte system are 2 key cogs. And whilst Perisic, I think, still is an elite player, I look at the others and just think that then they're not perhaps good enough. And they've certainly not been very good FPL options. You know, Emerson Royale, Doherty was good for a year a few years ago at Wolves, but a lot of managers since haven't fancied him. You know, he couldn't get in the team under Mourinho, even under Nuno at Spurs, wasn't fancied. I don't think the quality is necessarily there, and I expect Spurs to perhaps invest in the January transfer window in a new wingback. And when they do, they'll probably become a really good FPL option, because Conte wingbacks, for an FPL perspective, if they're listed as defenders, should be gold dust, especially when they're priced at 4.5 or even Perisic at 5.5. They should be really good value. So I'm really keen to see what develops there with Spurs for the second half of the season, because if they can feed Kane and Son, and Kane and Son are fit, there'll be so many assists for those guys.
Absolutely. I mean, imagine having Hakimi as your right wing back. We would all have him in our team.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. And Conte has worked with so many good wingbacks. He also has made a few wingbacks from the likes of Victor Moses at Chelsea a few years back. You know, he was a midfield FPL option that no one ever fancied, a cheap player, an enabler, but he became a regular starter that was getting assists every week. You know, remember Marcus Alonso under Conte? That was just brilliant from an FPL perspective. So I have no doubt our time will come again with Conte and FPL and wingbacks. But at the moment, it does just look like, you look at that Spurs team and it's Kane. I mean, look, Son has had a couple of big weeks. Andy, I think you owned Son, didn't you, for that 18-pointer?
I did. Look, I'm the biggest Son Heung-min fan, but at the same time, he hasn't had a great season. I think he's, you know, struggled to really work with Perisic on the left. I think their roles are very similar. They overlap a lot. They take up the same spaces. So I'm curious to see how this works out. But at this moment in time, for his price point, Son is a tough asset to have in your team, especially if you're giving up the likes of someone like Salah, Kane, or KDB for him.
Yeah. Just looked, it was actually a 19-pointer in 31 minutes versus Leicester. I guess you remember that game week fairly well. Game week 8, I guess you had a massive green arrow that week.
I'm in the works of printing out that haul and postering it on my wall and having it forever, because it's like why we play FPL, why we love this game. And it's for moments like that where nobody else is going for example, your favorite player, and he ends up hauling in, what, 21 minutes, I believe it was. So it's one of those FPL moments you'll definitely remember for a long time.
Yeah, I'm with you there. In that Spurs and Leeds fixture from the weekend, 4-3, I also was watching Leeds really closely. And I think in the last few weeks, not only have we seen Leeds winning a couple of games, you could argue they were a bit unlucky against Spurs, but they're also scoring loads of goals. And everything Jesse Marsh says pre and post match is all around fighting for the ball, the high press, but attacking teams. And I think this Leeds team is going to be really handy for FPL in the second half, because they've got a coach that just wants to attack. And remember, this is a guy from the Red Bull stable, if you like, and their coaches are encouraged to attack. And I think we'll see that at Leeds. And Rodrigo looked obviously sharp. But at 4.4 million, there's Somerville, who looks so, so good. It's taken him a while to break into the first team, but he's returned in the last four game weeks, including a 13-pointer against Bournemouth in game week 15. He looks really, really lively and clearly a favourite of Jesse Marsh in that kind of number 10 role, who kind of conducts play but also gets on the end of everything. A lot of midfield runs into the box. He's got a bit of a free role in that Leeds team.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned Leeds. I think Leeds is one to watch as well, and I'm very interested in their assets. Marsh has done a fantastic job. I think that when Bielsa left, we thought that the identity would change and, you know, Marsh would come in and implement his philosophy. But we also forget Marsh has done it at the top level. He's done it with Red Bull, as you mentioned. He's coached Haaland. He's coached Hwang Hee-chan from Wolves at one point. So I think he has the experience, and they're a very fun team to watch. Very attacking, as you mentioned. One that I'm very keen on is Rodrigo. His XG is extremely high. He's performing. He's scoring goals. He scored over the weekend. I'm very interested in having Rodrigo come game week 17. Depends on their fixture, but Leeds is definitely one to watch, as attacking as can be.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago, Rodrigo was the starting number 9 for Spain. Like, this is a guy who's got some pedigree. He had one unbelievable season in La Liga, but the fixtures are really nice. I mean, game week 17, he plays Man City. And then it's Newcastle 18. But after that, it's a sea of green. And I do think, you know, someone like Somerville, Rodrigo, perhaps even Aronson, you know, he's always good for an assist. Aronson possibly their defenders. We haven't seen a huge amount from their right back, Christensen, but again, another really, really good player is been on my watch list for some time. So yeah, I've been impressed with what Marsh has done since he's been under pressure in the last few weeks. He's kind of turned that round, and I think the fans are very much behind him. We've managed to go throughout most of this pod, Andy, without mentioning Man United, who are often a popular team people are looking at because, of course, they've got so many fans around the world, and their FPL options are always that little bit more highly owned than most because of the popularity of the club. But in recent weeks, again, they're winning games, and the likes of Rashford and Martial will now come into play. Are Man United a team that we should be looking at, do you think? Because I still haven't owned, I don't think, a Man United player all season. But again, I think there'll be a little bit of value in their fullbacks because Dalot and Shaw are cheap, but also possibly Rashford and Martial.
I agree with you. I haven't owned any of them, but they're just one of those teams that you just don't trust completely in terms of FPL. I will say this, though. Their first three fixtures coming into Game Week 17 are absolutely prime. So I think there's an opportunity to hop on maybe one or two of their assets. I like Luke Shaw as a shout. I do think Dalot is a decent shout. But, you know, where do you go up top? Do you go Rashford? Do you go Martial? Maybe if you want a cheaper third striker slot, you could go Martial, for example. But after the three fixtures come Game Week 17, their fixtures turn again. So I'm not so sure about whether I'll have a Manchester United assets.
Wow, when you said their fixtures are good, I thought, okay, I should check that out. Nottingham Forest, Wolves, Bournemouth, two of which are Old Trafford. That's the best three fixtures anyone's going to have, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, just to add on to that, I think they have a sea of home fixtures for the next, I would say, 10 game weeks from Game Week 17. So that's an additional bonus to any team because home games are always a higher chance of a win over away games.
Talking about the outlook for the next month and beyond, have you got your eyes on players or teams at the moment? Because for me, I'm kind of looking at the teams I want to target, but not necessarily the individuals yet. I think what we see in the World Cup will probably have a big impact on our transfers. But I know, for example, I'm going to be going big on Newcastle and Arsenal. I think with those three fixtures, I'll definitely cover the Man United attack. And of course, City will always be there or thereabouts in terms of a double or a triple up. Have you been looking at individuals or teams yet? Or are you very much a case of, I'm going to relax for the next couple of weeks and then turn my attention back towards FPL?
I think I'm a little bit on the latter side. I want to sort of watch out for the World Cup, see how certain FPL assets are doing. I like that you mentioned having, you know, Newcastle and Arsenal in your mind because you still need sort of a core team to have. For me, I think what it's going to come down to, Gianni, is which premium assets I'm going to have, because that will determine a lot of times how you sort of spread your budget and who you can afford in the end.
As always, for me, I'll be looking at, am I going with the two premiums or am I going to try and squeeze that third premium in again? I think for me, it will be two plus Darwin, which kind of feels like 2.5 premium attackers. But yeah, the World Cup's going to be super interesting. I don't know, for the players that aren't taking part, many will see that as an advantage, and I'm sure it's going to be an advantage, certainly for the second half of the second period of the season. But I do wonder, for the first few games back, if those that have just had 4, 5, 6 weeks off might be a little bit slow coming out the traps, and there might be a little bit more momentum with some of those that played in the World Cup. But then, of course, the flip side of that is if you've played in the World Cup but gone all the way to the finals or even the semi-finals, have you played too many games and do you really need a rest? So it's going to be a bit of a balancing act to try and identify who are the players we should be kind of beelining towards come December 26th.
Yeah, I just want to add to that. We just don't know. I mean, this is the first time a Winter World Cup has happened. The players return Boxing Day, and so then it's going to be a bunch of fixtures right after that. And so we just don't know how these teams are going to react. Maybe these fixtures don't even matter in the end because of the condition of these players when they come back from the World Cup.
Yeah, and I know Kelly and the team are back later this week with a pod looking almost exclusively at what we're doing for Game Week 17. So do make sure you check that one out, guys. Look forward to giving that a listen as well.
Johnny, it was a pleasure podding with you again. It's really nice to speak with you on FPL. For the World Cup, do you have any plans?
Yeah, I'm just going to be soaking it up as a passive fan. And I say passive because my team isn't at the World Cup, which is very disappointing for me. So I won't be able to cheer on my Italian team, but I can sit back and relax and still watch good football and just back the team that's playing well. And it'll be nice watching it in a way as a neutral. And of course, I've still got some of my favorite players playing for teams that I'll be cheering along the way. So no, it's going to be fun, but as always, I will have my eye on FPL. So still, I'll be looking at small advantages and gains I might be able to get from things we see in the World Cup. Not just the obvious things like peaks of form and injuries, but maybe little edges around players perhaps moving into slightly different positions or link up with different players. So yeah, I look forward to watching it as a fan.
Same here. I will be cheering on Sonny as well as our South Korea team, but not very hopeful on how far we get, but we'll see. Thank you guys for listening to us today. The World Cup is the perfect time for FPL managers to tinker with their teams, to help plan your strategy, as well as think about the teams and players to target. Kelly, Jules, and Sam will be back later this week with an episode of the FPL Pod, specifically on the unlimited transfer window and how to make the most out of this period. Thank you guys, and see you next time.